This is CliffCentral.com.
It's the 26th of June. All right, she's here. Look at you, Katie Katapotis. You have not aged at all. I mean, look, I spoke to you, what, 2 years ago about this book? Remember this book?
I remember that book.
Oh, you came and you popped in and we had a conversation about this, but it looks like you're happy and you're in a really good place. You walked in here full of bounce.
Huh? Well, why not? You. It's 8 o'clock in the morning. I'm seeing someone that I loved working with.
Yeah,
I love what I'm
seeing
around me. Why not?
21 years you've spent at Prime Media.
Can you believe it?
I mean, you know, some people would say there's almost like a bit of Stockholm syndrome when you get to... No, I mean, I'm not trying to be sarcastic or glib about this, because 21 years is a long time. That's longer than you've known your children.
It's longer than I've known my children.
Yeah.
It's just as long as I've known my husband, and longer than I've known many friends.
That's right. Mm. And when you're in a business like that, where there's so much pressure, and you were the news editor, and you're responsible for news over 21 years, where we've had some extraordinary news events occur, it becomes a bit of an addiction.
Mm.
I mean, even if we look at your book, I'm Missing News. I mean, you were talking there about how much it bothered you to miss out on the news while you were doing what a lot of women would consider the most important job of their lives, which is having and raising children. And you were like, I'm worried about the news.
And that's how we came up with that title. In fact, my son came up with that title. Because, you know, for a long time...
Nice of you to let him have some part in it. You know?
Yeah, for a long time, I would just hear him saying, I'm missing news. I wouldn't understand what he was on about. And then a news bulletin was on. And he said, but Mommy, it's I'm missing news. And I realized, oh, he meant eyewitness news.
Okay, I get it.
Yes,
sorry.
He meant eyewitness news. So I thought, oh, that's very, very cute. I think that's the title of the book.
We didn't get to that when you were last in.
Yes.
I just assumed it meant you were missing the news more than your kid. But it must have taken a lot of soul searching to decide to, after 21 years, make a move. Because you could very easily have done what so many people end up doing in the business, and you just stay in it until eventually they tell you, hey, listen, it's time. And not that that was on the cards at all for you, but it's a hard thing to be able to turn your back on 21 years of an incredible career.
And a team that I love so much, you see. So it took a long time for me to decide this, and it wasn't an overnight decision. But I thought to myself, I'm in this comfort zone. I love what I do, yes, but I'm also very comfortable, and I'm someone who hates change. So if I want to grow, because I think growth is really, really important, because if you keep moving, it's fine. So I've been there for 21 years, but I've kept moving in those 21 years. So I thought to myself, you know what? If this is where you are, this little circle of comfort, push yourself out of that space and get into this uncomfortable zone.
But that's easier said than done.
So I'm in this uncomfortable zone now, and I'm thinking, I've done it. I can't believe it.
Are you sort of a little bit nervous about what could be next? Because even if you planned it and you thought it through, and let's say for the last 5 years you've been thinking about what's next, and you've got a plan. I mean, you're not the kind of person who would just jump without something underneath to land on. I know you that well. But let's say the best laid plans are there and they're waiting for you and you're excited about them. There must be a part of you that's going, oh God, I hope this isn't a mistake.
There's a part of me inside of me that's like jelly, that is just wobbling. And I'm thinking, I hope this isn't exactly that, Gareth. But at the same time, I say to myself, you know what? This is the time. Mm. 21 years, if not now, when? Hopefully, I'm still young enough to be able to launch another part of my career. And I think it's important. So I'm putting the jelly aside.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, let's ignore those wobbles when they
but
come
also,
along.
I mean, you mentioned the team. And there are a lot of people whose careers you've had a major hand in helping along the way. I mean, Poppy was telling me she had her first ever interview at 19 with you.
I know. You know how many calls I've had like that? You know how many people have come to me to say that, and how I look back and I go, wow, it really is quite something. Because we also take ourselves
for granted.
Do you
know that you chased Poppy out with a broom?
Yeah, don't lie. Don't lie, Mr. Cliff. I never did.
I actually, you're right. You do take yourself for granted, because as a matter of that experience, you've always been not even in the back of my mind, but top of mind in terms of forming my career where I wanted to go. So I started out in news. I listened to you, I watched you, and then I was like, maybe you should have taken the job. maybe you should have taken the job.
Who were your major influences when you first got into it? I mean, who were the people who you looked up to?
So when I was growing up, I would listen to the likes of Chris Gibbons, Deborah Patter, Rich Hilton Barber. And of course, I thought to myself, I remember sitting in the kitchen one day with my mother, and there was this political analysis happening on 702. And I thought, shit, that's cool. I'd like to do that one day. Little did I know, fast forward a few years, that there I would be. And in fact, a few years ago, I was asked to contribute to a book, A Letter to Your 16-Year-Old Self, which, by the way, is an amazing thing to do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Write a letter to your 16-year-old self. So I was asked, write a letter to your 16-year-old self. I thought, oh, that's quite cool. But let me go back to my parents' home, because I've got a whole stack of stuff there. What was my 16-year-old self actually like?
Yeah.
And I found an entire folder of news clippings, which I'd forgotten about.
You were a bit obsessed.
I was a bit obsessed. And I completely forgot that there I was as the 16-year-old. I mean, I should have had like George Michael on the wall, you know, and posters of Wham and who was hot in the day, heaven knows. But there I had a whole lot of news clippings sitting in this blue folder. And I had this vague recollection of, oh, yes. I used to cut these out because I thought, you know what? This is important. I want to hold on to this. I need to keep that. I need to reread that.
I mean, did you have archives and scrapbooks and all of that stuff? And
exactly that. Exactly that.
Did you keep all of that stuff through your 21 years at Primedia?
Well, there it was in my mother's house, actually.
Oh, so you've got a good record of your own career.
Well, that not so much. No, that not so much. I think it comes with the territory of taking ourselves. You know, you don't really... You don't want to focus on yourself. The news, the career, the actual... You're not so much about, who wrote an article about
it. You might have been the person who told people about the major events of the last 21 years. You might have been the voice that introduced those stories to them, that shocked the hell out of them, that told them something that they didn't know.
I was the person who told them Diana died.
Yeah.
That I remember.
Sia and I were talking about that yesterday. It's 21 years ago.
Sure. I remember arriving, and I was still quite junior and quite green. And it was early in the morning.
It was like a Saturday or something.
Yeah.
Wasn't it?
I think it was a Saturday morning, and I walked in, and Reuters was bleeding. It was just red.
So how did it work in those days? Was there a fax machine? Was there a telex? What kind of machine
I'm
was...
I'm not that old.
No. But what kind of machine was it that delivered these Reuters stories? Because the internet was kind of just starting to
it
come along.
It was kind of like an old style monitor. So there it was, this monitor.
Oh, okay. With like green writing on it.
Green on a normal day. On the day Diana had an accident, blood red. Blood red. And I thought, oh my goodness.
Wow.
What on earth is going on here? Diana and Dodie, accident.
And was it you alone in the newsroom?
It was me alone at 3:30 in the morning. And then I switched the television on.
Did you feel your blood?
I did.
Pumping through your veins?
And then I thought to myself, I've got to do this. I've actually got to do this. My first bulletin wasn't for a while. It was only at 5:30. So I wrote as much as I could. At 5:30 I went in, Diana and Dodie in an accident. By the time I came out, she died. And I phoned my then editor, Jeremy Maggs. And I woke him up and I said, Jeremy, Diana's dead. And he basically said, stop messing with me. It's not funny. It's early. It's a weekend.
Yeah.
I'm sleeping. I said, did you not hear me? Diana's dead. And in a split second, he was up. And then before I knew it, within 15, 20 minutes, that station was just full. And it was buzzing, and everyone just swung into action. And as part of that day, I have a very interesting recollection, because I'm still very junior, as I said, of Jeremy saying to Alan Matthews, you remember Alan Matthews?
Yeah, yeah.
Saying, should we keep her on air, or should someone else take over?
While you were in the room?
Well, a little bit further away. It was in the newsroom.
And they were talking about
should
you?
Should we keep her on air? And then they kind of glanced over me and carried on these whispers, and Alan said, absolutely, keep her where she is.
Wow.
So I was like, sigh of relief. I can continue reporting on Diana's death.
That's a bit of a baptism by fire, though.
Yeah, it really was. It really was.
It doesn't.
But I've had many baptisms by fire.
Yeah, I could believe it. I remember, you know, you took the job of news very seriously. I wonder how many people are still feel that way in a world of social media, in a world where the news cycle is so much shorter, and where we're just, our attention span is just half, a third, a quarter, who knows, much, much smaller than it ever was. Do you think news is still taken as seriously by people now and in the same way that it was taken seriously then?
Gareth, I worry about news. I won't lie. I worry about the future of news and where it's going to go, and I think social media has a lot to do with that. So it's exactly what you're talking about, this very fast-paced cycle, our small attention spans. And I say to myself, what is it going to look like in a few years from now? We're okay for now, but we've got to be careful, and we've got to slow things down. Because it's on Twitter doesn't make it true.
Yeah, fake news.
Because you've had 1,000 retweets, it doesn't mean it's so. Because someone has tweeted something, and it's had 10,000 likes and another 15,000 retweets, it doesn't mean it's factual. And the job of checking and double-checking and making sure you've got 3 and 4 sources, that's worrying me, because I think that's fallen away to a large degree. But we've got to be very, very careful if we're going to keep it pure.
Who did you look to in terms of overseas? Because eventually you must have got to a point very quickly at 702 where you were looking around and there wasn't a lot of competition for Eyewitness News. You guys were, in terms of radio, you know, streaks ahead of everybody else.
We were making up our own rules, essentially, as we went on.
Yeah, well, you had to, which is the point of what's so innovative about what happened there. And maybe that's why, for such a long time, Eyewitness News had such an unassailable lead. But there must have been international role models for what you were doing too, because there are, you know, anywhere in the world, it could have been in Bangladesh for all I know. There was some news agency, some news room, a hub somewhere that was creating a template that you thought was impressive and that you would use sometimes just to match yourself against some competition you thought was worthy.
Well, we would always look abroad as well as locally, because we wanted to keep ahead of the trends as well.
But I mean, you had SABC. That was bullshit.
And what interested me was that, I'm still getting over that you can say bullshit on air. It's wonderful.
It was just really amateurish by comparison, because you guys weren't comparing yourselves to the local news.
And even today, it's, you know, without sounding arrogant, but we can't really compare ourselves as Eyewitness News to other radio newsrooms, because we're not that. We're just so much more, and we're so different.
Well,
we created our own template.
Look, let's just look at, I mean, I can say this, you can't, but you can take credit for it. So, first of all, well-resourced, talented news people who were hungry, who did their job. I mean, look at how many of your Eyewitness News journalists have published books and have been awarded and
have amazing TV careers,
recognized internationally. They've got TV careers. They've got all of these things going on. They've turned into presenters themselves of various other programs. These are very talented people. So you've got great human resources. You had money to back you up. So you had the equipment that you needed. You had the checks and balances in place to make sure that things were done properly. And then you also had this mechanism of support, which you largely created, where your journalists felt like they were safe. They would sometimes report on dangerous things. They would sometimes be in situations where they might have been in personal peril in some way, shape, or form, but they knew they could come to you and you would make sure that they were safe and they were looked after. That doesn't happen very easily.
And that's such an important part of leadership and editorial, having your reporters' backs all the time, even when they make mistakes. Because we're a newsroom of human beings, not robots.
And those
mistakes are going to happen.
And they can cost money, and they can have very serious consequences.
And reputations and money and all that. But having their back and supporting them was, for me, one of the most important things. So they knew that even if we had to have a tough conversation about how did that happen, it's okay. Because together, we're going to fix this. Let's go out there, this absolute united front, and we will fix this. I promise you. We killed off a president, you know that.
Yeah, well, I think that the whole of South Africa deserves a little bit of credit. People like Jacques Po and, you know, some of those brave people who took that situation on. And I think everybody now knows what the right thing was. But at the time, it wasn't so clear cut. And there were a lot of people who would be called every kind of thing for being anti-Jacob Zuma. But I'm interested in those stories that now you can start telling, and I don't know whether you're comfortable to do it or not, but those situations where you had to go to battle for your journalists, where you had to stand up to the board, where you had to stand up to shareholders, where you had to stand up to other news professionals, you know, SANEF is an important part of this whole thing. Can you just maybe share one or two of those examples so that people can get an idea of what it's like to be a news editor? Because they think you just sit there and go, okay, you do this, you do that, you do that, and then you sit in your office and rub your hands
and play Tetris on your computer.
Yeah, wait for something to happen.
Mm. So one of the things that has made EWN the success that it is, actually, Gareth, is that editorial independence was something that was in our DNA. There was never really a matter of interference, actually. And the few instances that there were, I did put up a fight. So I remember the time that Lead Essay was first born. Mm-hmm. And Prime Media started with Lead Essay. And I love Lead Essay, actually. I think as a concept, it works really well.
Yeah.
But it's got no place in news. It's got absolutely no place in a news bulletin or in a newsroom. So quite honestly, let's have the Lead Essay conversation, uh-huh. but can you keep it outside of the newsroom, please?
Right.
So that was an example.
Because it's a little bit of propaganda that you start putting it in
news.
Well,
first of all, don't tell us what to run. Don't mm-hmm. tell us what to write. And certainly don't tell us we're going to run fluffy stuff, because at the end of the day, you don't applaud a fish for swimming.
Yep.
You tell the news. We don't do PR. We do the news. So I remember that was definitely a case in point.
And you got some pushback on that?
Oh, yes. Oh, stand-up arguments. Yeah. Stand-up arguments.
Did you ever leave any of those arguments and quietly cry?
Never.
No.
No, it's never.
So tough.
No, never, never. Not to say I've never shed a tear, by the way. It's been a lot of tears in the past 3 weeks, or 2 weeks, I won't lie. I won't lie. There have been lots of tears. But that was one example where I'll never forget. There was something about bunnies, actually. And there was a Save the Bunny, and Lead Essay was doing it, and doesn't EWN want to run this because there was a bunny parker? I was like, absolutely not. It's not going to happen. Don't talk to me about it. It is not going to, it's just not going to be. So that was one. I mean, other examples is when programming, because you know we operated as totally separate entities. By the time you left, mm-hmm. we were completely separate. So 702, 947, Cape Talk, KFM were very different to the newsroom.
Mm-hmm.
Is when station managers would come to our Eyewitness News reporters and go, will you do this for me? Will you do that for me? We've got this event here, that event there. And I was like, hang on a second. No. Does it compromise them editorially? Does it put them in a space that doesn't allow them to, well, to just keep that integrity and that credibility?
But also, you had work for them. You didn't. They didn't work for someone
24/7.
Else. 24/7. No, you had the news business doesn't shut down. You don't go to sleep.
But you know what I loved? I loved that we could have these arguments and debates and still leave the room okay with each other. That was important to me.
But this is something that people, I suppose, only figure out once they've had enough experience, is that standing up for yourself and disagreeing with somebody is going to end up getting you more respect in the long run than just being a pushover and trying to be everyone's friend. I think a lot of people go into business and they try to be everybody's friend, and they think it's like a social activity.
Mm.
And no one will respect you in business if you like that.
And you don't have to make it personal.
No.
You don't have to be vicious. You just have to stand up for the principle. For me, that's really important. Stand up for the principle, your personal values, and you'll be okay. Something that I think we still need to learn on the streets of social media specifically, because it's become this vile, horrible troll-like place where one says good morning and then suddenly you get
attacked by somebody.
Yeah, completely.
So for the years as news editor, you would go in, what sort of hours did you have? Would you arrive, you'd go into your office, have a cup of coffee, and then you'd have a meeting with everybody? How did it work?
So it depends, Gareth, because over the 21 years I did many, many different things. So for a long time I woke up extremely early in the morning to read morning news.
Right.
And I was reading morning news, and for a while I wasn't the editor, but then I was the editor while reading morning news. And while some would have the luxury of going home at 9 or 10 or 11 o'clock, I continued my day.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd wake up, my alarm would go off at 3 o'clock in the morning. And you know what it's like. You know what it's like. I mean, I'm speaking to a team that is... And you hate your life for the first 10 minutes. You know, you really do. I'm sorry, but it just...
No one likes. I have yet to meet all these people who say they wake up and they just love being awake and then...
They're rubbish. They're lying. They're absolutely lying. You hate your life for the first 10 or 15 minutes.
Sure. And then
you're fine. You know, you get into your car. I used to drive in with music blaring.
Mm-hmm.
It was the only way. I used to drive in with music blaring, singing at the top of my voice. I'm completely tone deaf, so you can imagine what my vehicle sounded like. Horrible, horrible.
I wish we had recordings of that.
Yeah. So that would be, I think, over 10 years I did that.
Uh-huh.
When my son was born, I remember timing my feed just before I left home. So I would wake this poor child up at like 2:30, do a quick feed, and then put him back and head out. And then later on, I wouldn't do morning drive, but I like to be there for morning drive.
Because that's where the breaking stuff happens.
That's where it happens.
It's where your biggest audiences are.
Yes.
you know, you need
to pay attention. That's where it happens. Yeah. And if I was setting the diary, I'd be there by 6-ish or 6:30, and you'd set a news diary.
So what is that? Explain to us like we're idiots and we don't know, because I don't think I even know what a news diary is.
So
what
that's sitting down and going, okay, today is Tuesday, the 26th of June.
Yeah.
What do we have on our radar? What's on the agenda? Who's doing what? We have a calendar of events.
Do your reporters come to you and say, these are the stories I'm chasing?
In the diary meeting.
Okay.
Oh, and if they don't, they're sent back.
Okay.
Yeah, so you can't come to a diary meeting with nothing.
Ooh.
Like, you can't just be spoon-fed. You have to come with something to this diary meeting. So I'll put the skeleton together. I would have put the skeleton together.
Mm-hmm.
Newspapers, the internet, social media, international, the calendar that we've got. And also just things that you've seen that you want to follow up, a little bit of analysis that you want your team to do. Mm-hmm. You're thinking, oh, that was interesting. I heard someone say something. Let's look at that. Then there's the diary meeting, 9:30.
Right.
Lots, I mean, the team is there and you go around one by one. What do you have? What do you have?
Was
what do you have?
Like the most exciting part of the day.
It was a fabulous part of the day, because there'd also be moments of, what do you mean you don't know the story? Haven't you read the papers today? No, I didn't get it. Okay, you know what? I tell you what, just go away, read all the newspapers, and when you've read them, can you come back to this diary? Because we're not having a conversation if you haven't read the papers.
It's so hard, because a lot of people who are in news are super informed and they know exactly what's going on, and they read the paper from cover to cover, and they go online and they research everything and they're just nonstop absorbing. But you then have to translate that to an audience that might have no idea of what you're talking about. So you have to go back to basics. You have to examine the first principles. You have to say, well, you know, this story, here's how it all happened, and introduce people who might not have the first clue. And it almost feels like all of that knowledge that you've absorbed has to be distilled into something quite basic some of the time.
And into 40 seconds.
Yeah.
So you're writing a voice report for 40 seconds.
Right.
So in the early part of my career, one of my editors looked at me and said, do you have a grandparent? I said, I do. How old is she? I said, she's 75 years old. Where is she now? I said, well, I don't know. I think she's in her house in Edenvale at the moment, actually. He said, well, from now on, he said, you will write for your 75-year-old grandmother. And everything you write will be aimed at that woman sitting in her home in Edenvale.
Well, no wonder 702's audience is so old.
Oh.
I stepped into that one.
No, but that makes sense, because old people, they're not interested in flowery nonsense. They want to know the facts. Old people, they can't hear very well, so you've got to get it through to them while they're still listening. And you've got 40 seconds to explain a story.
Yeah, so do it properly or go home.
What are the most complicated things to try and explain to an audience? Can you recall a scenario, and especially in South Africa with all of our complicated political shenanigans and Guptas and all the rest of it, there must have been situations where you go, I can't do this in 40 seconds. Mm. No one can.
Mm. Enter the podcast.
Uh-huh.
Ah, which is what we've started doing lately. I mean, you started this before anyone else did, Gareth. But being able to put a podcast together now,
mm-hmm.
That tells a much lengthier, deeper story is actually an amazing thing, because
have you seen what the New York Times do with their daily?
Oh, don't you love it?
That's
I love it. It's great stuff. So it's difficult to sit in a court case and to distill something into 30 or 40 seconds where you really want to get into the meat of it, for example. So courts, the TRC, for example, the mm-hmm. very little bits that I did of the TRC, politics, mm-hmm. and very complicated economic stories. Those are tough to distill into these 30 or 40 seconds.
And do you think that audiences are more discerning than they've ever been, or that they're more superficial than they've ever been? Like, do people want to get into the granular stuff? Especially because in radio, you're torn between trying to cater to everybody, hoping you don't tune people out by being boring, or leaving stuff out that's important that will appeal to your core audience. I mean, it's hard, right?
So the minute you're boring, they switch off.
Yeah, they're gone.
I mean, we know that. They're gone. Your audience is gone. You want to be boring? No problem. That's why we say use interesting sound, use interesting bits. Others might call it sensationalism. I don't believe it's that. I think it's just trying to keep the attention of an audience that is promiscuous, quite frankly. They're not indebted to you, and they're not forced to listen to you.
No, those days of kind of people would have their favorite station.
No, they're gone. They're gone. So it's about the experience now. Mm-hmm. So I've got options. The news story you've got versus the talk show you've got, others also have them.
Yeah.
It's now about the experience that you offer. So I can get this piece of information anyway, but are you going to make me feel or think in a certain way? And if you are, and I enjoy that, I'll be back tomorrow until you bore me. And then I go somewhere else and maybe I'll return.
Mm. Yeah. And obviously then credibility is an important part of it too. So in news, that's probably more important than anything else.
Oh,
your ability to tell the stories secondary or even tertiary to the credibility you have to build.
Because it's that trust factor.
And that can go wrong in one story. Mm. Like if you screw up one story and enough people are pissed off about it, your credibility goes to ground.
It goes to ground for that moment, but hopefully people are also not like goldfish, and their memories extend further to just that mistake.
Yeah.
But I mean, and they'll realize that, like, there is a bank of trust that hopefully, like, they can make a withdrawal.
Let's just take a guy like Brian Williams, you know, the NBC newsreader. This guy, he went on news every night and told everybody what was going on in the world, and he was a great newsreader, and everybody thought he was terribly credible, and he was the voice and the face of news in America for a long time. Then he goes on Letterman, and he tells the story about how he was in Iraq in this helicopter, and he was shot at. Turns out the whole thing is just bullshit.
It's a lie. Yes.
I mean, maybe his memory let him down, whatever. But the guy's basically screwed up, and they fire him. He still doesn't have much of a career going. I don't think he could ever get back into news. There's such an unforgiving aspect to news in that respect.
But what he also did was unforgivable, Gareth. So when I talk about, yes, he lied about the events and his experience in a news story, that our memory fails us from time to time, and we think it was Clinton, but actually it was Bush, and you know, you kind of put in an incorrect name or date or place.
So you don't
that's
have
fine.
Any, you're not going to give him any
but
quarter.
I don't have sympathy for that, because you intentionally go out and you fabricate a story about your experience in a news event.
Poppy, aren't you pleased you didn't end up working for us? She's
wow.
very
How do you prevent that from happening in your stories and in the copy that you do put out? Because I imagine people's experiences are different, and people internalize and interpret things differently.
Yeah.
So, you know, the internalization and interpretation, Poppy, you're 100% right. That is different, and it comes out in your analysis. But whether or not you were there is a fact that you cannot fudge. Actually. Mm-hmm. So if you were there, you were there. Tell the story. If you were not there and you pretend that you were there, bye-bye now. Goodbye.
Another question that worries me, and it also got to me when I was in news, and maybe I'm a softie, is how do you deal with the stuff that you're dealing with? Do you go to therapy? Because some of that stuff is so harrowing, and it's happening to real people. For me, I could never deal, and that's why I left news, because every day someone was dying, someone was getting raped, and a lot of the time it was becoming too close to home as well, that I was just like, I can't do this.
It's really, really hard. And I'm not going to lie, it's one of the things that over the years I've tried, especially with the team, to get around, to say, let's help you as much as possible. So we have a wellness program in the newsroom.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow.
You have to go for debriefs. You have to go for trauma counseling.
Yeah, it would make sense to have like an in-house counselor.
Yes, yes.
Right.
You have to go for trauma counseling. And some of the stories that they come back with, you know, there was a dreadful story some time ago about a young child who was killed in a hijacking. And as our reporter arrived on the scene, the distraught mother collapsed in the reporter's arms.
Okay.
So that kind of gets into your system. You can't escape that.
Yeah.
So it's so important to go for debriefs. It's so important to go for counseling, to understand the trauma. And then it's just strategies. So what we did once, I was having a conversation with a reporter who was really struggling. She was saying, it just seemed to be many, I think it was child deaths that she was working on. And there just seemed to be so many. And I said, I have an idea. So about two Saturdays after, we went to this amazing thing called bubble soccer. Have you ever played bubble soccer?
No.
You climb into a giant ball.
Oh, right. Okay.
It's a giant ball.
Yeah, yeah.
You climb in and you play soccer and you clap each other.
You smash into each other.
It's really stunning. So we did that as a fun team building exercise. But essentially what I wanted to get across and what I said to them afterwards is, now this ball that you placed yourself in, this cocoon, as difficult as it may be, when you go out to these stories, just try to visualize this ball around you. So yes, you can have empathy. Yes, you've got to be sensitive. But we also can't take it in. Easier said than done, by the way. And it takes years of practice and little strategies here and there. But it was just one of the coping mechanisms that that we try to get into the team. That and massages on a Friday. So
Okay.
So you know these portable, like we'd bring in people who would give you like a 15 or 20 minute massage. Ooh. In a room. Just relax, you know. But it's tough.
Do you think that as a young woman, when you were appointed news editor, that gave you advantages? Because obviously there are disadvantages that are quite clear. I mean, there you know, it's a news has always been perceived as this very male, very aggressive, very hostile environment where, you know, you have to have tons of experience, years and years of being in the newsroom, being as hard as nails, and being male with that testosterone would have been an added advantage for some of those guys. But being a woman, what were the advantages? And particularly being young, you were 26 when you...
I was ridiculously young.
Yeah, for news editor.
I was ridiculously young. And I remember saying to Rina and to Yusuf when they told me, they said, I think you're making a mistake. I don't think I'm the person, because there are others around me who should be doing this. Other men, by the way, that I had just assumed would get this over and above me. But there were advantages, Gareth, and there were disadvantages. So the advantages were that I had amazing female role models in my career. I mean, Rina being one of them, Terry Falkvang being someone else later on in my life. These were strong women who led the way. Mm-hmm. And you kind of went, wow, there isn't a glass ceiling. I don't have to reach a certain peak when I'm stuck. And then I get stuck. I have a road ahead of me. And I cannot begin to tell you how that inspired me. Because that gave me the confidence to go, I can move. And I can go. And I don't have to be a man to do it. Disadvantages in that... I got a lot of pushback to begin with. I got a lot of pushback. And there was, in one scenario, he was older than me, I think he was about 50 at the time, senior person in the newsroom, who basically said to me, please accept my resignation. I cannot work for a woman.
Really?
Who is younger than me. So here we go. And in that moment, I thought to myself, well, I've got two options now. I can either just accept this gracefully and say, well, cheers, thank you very much. Or I can say something back, but I didn't know what. So it was option number one for me. It was, all right, no. I'm sorry you feel this way.
Do you wish you thank could you. Go back now?
I don't.
Done it differently?
No, I don't. I don't. I was very happy with the way I dealt with that at the time. But it knocked me, and it knocks your confidence. And you think, maybe I don't know what I'm doing. Maybe I'm too young. And too many times did I end up sitting around a table, not just in the business, but outside the business, if we were speaking to where I was the only woman.
Mm-hmm.
And you would think, but how is this possible? You know, like it's the 2000s now, but it was possible. And I think we made a lot of strides as a society, but now I think we've gone a bit backwards.
Oh, really?
I do.
That's interesting.
I think from a patriarchal perspective, I think we've regressed a little bit as a society. I'm not sure the reasons why. It's one of the things I want to get into in this new part of my life, and I want to have proper discussions. You know, we're currently having a very important discussion in South Africa about race.
Yes.
And it's important, and it has to happen. The next real discussion we have to put on the table is gender.
Tell me what you think is going on. I mean, what's your observation of the situation at the moment?
So my observation, Gareth, is that why it's happening, I'm not sure, but I get the sense that there might be an element where we've regressed as a society, and I see it play out.
You mean women's role in society is retracting? You mean that men are starting to bully women back into...
I think it's the way that male privilege... And kind of exerts or exposes itself. I see the many cases of femicide that are happening in our society. I see the many cases of women abuse. It's not getting better. It's actually getting worse. And we have to ask ourselves, but why? If I have my own agency, if this is me, if I've got control and power over my body, then why am I being told to behave in a certain way, dress in a certain way? Why are women becoming the targets? You hear so many incidents. There was this Grant Thornton incident of sexual harassment. You know, you at CEO level, and the corporate culture of patriarchy, I think is something that we need to seriously discuss.
But this is quite political, because, I mean, you could also argue that there are so many damaged, broken, shitty men out there.
Of course.
Right? And that's got nothing to do with privilege. That's almost the opposite of it. It's these victimized, these I call them beta males, you know? These kind of guys who are, they're losers. And then they take it out on women, and they take it out on their children, and they're in the cycle of being losers. And I think that's almost more of a problem than kind of that entitled idea of a privileged male.
So I think there are two issues there. I think that men, by the very nature of their gender, have a certain privilege. So even if you've had a crappy upbringing, even if you are this broken person that you talk about, I do think that they think at some level they have an authority and a privilege over women. I think just by the very nature of their gender. That's the one thing. The other layer, which we have to get to as a society, is our broken society.
Mm.
In terms of where we are, where we have got so many people, child-headed households,
yeah,
children who are essentially taking care of themselves with no parents, with no parental figure.
Yeah.
We have got people living in informal settlements, and you've got a situation where children are exposed to the most abhorrent things because there are three and four couples living in a one-roomed place.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's children, not, young no way children, that can ever end up being male, healthy. Male and female are exposed to sex, abuse, alcohol, whatever it is,
at a very young age.
In front of them, yeah, at a very, very young age. So one of the things that I think is important is the male child, because we focus so much on the girl child.
I'm with you here.
We focus so much on the girl child, and rightly so, by the way. I'm not saying we shouldn't. Yeah. But my own experience with my own
boys.
If there's
any depredation that goes on in society, it's usually the girl child who's the victim.
Correct. You know? Correct. So and that certainly needs to be addressed.
But you were going to say the male child?
But I think the male child also needs our attention. And in a slightly different and more nuanced way. But if I look at my kids, for example, my two boys, mm-hmm, I think we have a responsibility as parents, as teachers, as community leaders, as grandparents, to try and raise these young boys in our society, whether they live in my home or your home or wherever they are, to be decent human beings.
Right.
To be able to respect whoever it is they're talking to, and especially younger, I don't want to say girls, because it's kind of like boxing them, but they're taught in a way to respect the weaker, and I use this in inverted commas, sex.
Well, more vulnerable.
The
Let's
more
just
vulnerable,
say physically
essentially.
Vulnerable.
Correct.
Because, I mean, essentially what you're saying is not, this is not a surprise to anybody.
And let's not ignore our young boy children.
Well, that's it. But, you know, again, it's like good male role models are hard to come by in South Africa.
I think we can be. I think you can be a good male role model even if you're a woman.
That's putting extra, you know, they've proven, and this is an unwelcome fact, but they've proven that single parent households, there are just some things that disadvantage kids, even though that mother's doing her very best and she's probably putting in triple the hours and she's working herself to death and she's trying to cater to every need of the child. A child with just a mom is going to be significantly disadvantaged over a child who comes from a family where there's a parent of both genders.
We see so many single mothers, though, Gareth, who are doing the role and the job of fathers.
Yeah.
And that's why I say you can be that good role model.
Yeah.
Do they need these strong, confident people in their lives as children to teach them the right way? Of course they do. So I think there's a whole conversation we've got to have in South Africa about this. And we've got to start from our very, very small kids.
And
our boy children.
It sounds to me like you are heading towards activism here. Sounds like this is a part of the future of Katie Katapotis.
I feel strongly about this. I feel strongly about gender issues, very much so. And one of the things I want to do is have a dialogue about that. Let's have proper discussions. So yes, maybe it does.
How are you going to put all this experience and your own expertise around communication and news and reporting and media and all of this stuff to work in your new evolution? Mm. What's next? I mean, are you ready to reveal what kind of thing you're going to be doing next?
I am ready to reveal.
Tell us. You want a drum roll for this?
It's still in the... Go for it.
Yes, please.
We want the whole thing done properly,
right? You think I was going
to
say no?
No, we're just going to check it all. Ladies and gentlemen, here it is. The big reveal.
Nice drum roll.
Yeah, well, I did it all with my hands on the desk.
So it's in its infancy stages, but it is a company called Nala Media, which I've started with two other amazing women.
Mm-hmm.
And we are hoping through Nala to be able to do a whole lot of things because it's got various arms to it and various branches to it.
Who are these other two women?
Yes. So the one is, without the drum roll, Pimelo Motine.
Okay.
Pimelo is, and if anyone watched Generations, they will remember Pimelo from Generations. And she is soon to be on The Queen, which is going to show soon. And she's also a breakfast show host on weekends on 702.
She's no slouch.
Right. She is definitely no slouch. Okay. We have become great friends and we work so well together. The other amazing woman is a woman called Penny Pepper. Yes. Who people confused
that's
with Papa
name.
Pepper
when I first Peppa Pig the kids show. All right, so you Peppa
Papa
Pig
Penny.
And
Papa Penny was a yeah, who could, yeah, was it Papa right, Penny? Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
And she's been in media for many many years. Has worked in executive producer at ENCA. So the three of us got together, and what happened was over coffee, over lunches, over many many laughs, we actually said, hang on, just stop. There's something here. Because we couldn't help but talk about our industry and about stories and about content. And then we thought, there's something going on here.
Yeah.
Maybe we need to explore it a bit deeper.
Okay. So are you guys going to be producing content? Are you going to be facilitating discussions? Are you going to be running campaigns? What kind of
we are going to be producing content, content that falls outside of the news cycle, but which we're really still interested in and hopefully South Africans will be interested in. So we're currently in talks with some TV platforms to talk about
television.
Putting that content on television.
All right.
That's the one arm. As part of our conversations around dialogue, that's the other arm of it. Let's set up these discussions and let's talk about it as South Africans. And then the third arm is corporate communication and strategy, because we know media and we know how the media consumes the information that is sent to us by corporates. And we're kind of saying, I think we've got a role to play here, because I think that people in corporate, if they had a better understanding of the media landscape, would maybe send us more interesting press releases.
Yeah, well,
if, to begin with,
if you should even be doing
exactly.
press releases in 2018, you know. But this is exciting. So, are you ready for this challenge? You're going to jump in and neck deep. You're going to just take to it.
Neck deep. We're going to take
this
to it.
Is exciting.
We've been working. I'm very very excited because I'm working with amazing women as well, and people seem to be quite interested in what we're doing, which has also overwhelmed me a little bit. But it's been good.
What are you going to miss about the newsroom?
Everything. I won't lie. I'll miss everything. I'll miss everything, and at the same time, I'll just keep that in my heart, you know? So the people first and foremost. I work with the craziest, most talented, most fascinating, nutty people you can possibly imagine. The fun we have in that newsroom, you cannot believe. So I'll definitely miss the people. But the wonderful thing is that I'll still be in touch with them because, you know, we're not going anywhere.
No, well, that's the point.
You know, we're not going anywhere.
And it's weird. When you leave the forced environment of a workplace where you have to see people every day, you realize that the ones that you really want to see, you can still see and you will. And the ones that you don't, you kind of leave behind.
Exactly.
Not everybody goes with you, you know?
I think in the long term, I'll miss the adrenaline of a breaking news story. For now, I'm looking forward to not having that.
Yeah.
For now, I'm looking forward to not having this 24/7, my phone on constantly, having to constantly be on the very
edge
of
breaking
news. I
heard your children are plotting to destroy your phone. Is that true? Crush it and destroy it under rocks or something.
You know, many years ago, I was doing an interview for a magazine, and the interviewer said to me, how do your kids describe you? I said, actually, you know what? Can I answer that tomorrow? I'm going to go home and ask them this. So I go home and
like
I say,
a reporter.
Yeah, I say to them, they want to know, how would you describe mommy? And so my eldest says, oh, she's the best, kindest, prettiest mommy in the world. But sometimes she loves her cell phone more than us.
Oh. Wow.
Yes.
Kids don't lie.
Tell me,
he calls it Freedom Day, by the way. My young son, my 8-year-old, calls my departure Freedom
Day.
Wow. Well,
that should tell you something.
That's a story. Mm. I'll tell you what, he's going to be spending years in therapy revealing all of it. You need the counselor, not in the newsroom, to hang around your kids. Mom's been working this hard. What has it been like at SANEF, the South African National Editors Forum? Because you are deputy chairperson,
yes.
Right?
Re-elected on Saturday, actually.
Are they going to kick you out when you're no longer
news
editor?
I thought they were going to kick me out. I actually, You're so right, because we had our elective AGM on Saturday,
mm-hmm.
and I thought, well, I mean, I had already told our chairperson,
yeah.
listen, this is what's happening. It was out there. And then suddenly we got to the nomination process, and it was a very different story.
They didn't throw you out.
They didn't kick me out. They didn't show me the door. They didn't boot me onto the pavement,
well,
you know?
That's nice. That's good. At least you're appreciated, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah. So I love my SANEF work. I love what SANEF does. I love the team that I work with. And we play an important role.
You've stood up to some pretty hectic
bullies.
Attacks and bullies for government people, people in the private sector, NGOs some of the time. Yeah. I mean, you know, SANEF's taken some hits.
Yeah, SANEF has taken some hits. But we believe in what we do, because mm-hmm. it's a principled organization that believes in journalism first and in the integrity and credibility of the media and in media freedom. Let our reporters do their jobs, actually.
What do you make of all of this stuff that goes on now on social media and in public, where if someone disagrees with someone else, they want to attack that person's business, they want to attack their personality, they want to tear them down, they want to say that this person should be put out of business, they attack their sponsors or their advertisers or their business partnerships. I mean, do you think that this is a healthy way for us to go?
I think the weaponization of social media and Twitter in particular is disgusting and abhorrent. I cannot bear it. I think it's terrible. It's happened to me personally. Mm-hmm. It's happened to you, Gareth. It's mm-hmm. happened to so many. Just recently, Ferial Haffagy was told that she wished she had a bullet, or they wished that she had a bullet in her head.
Yeah.
She wrote a column for Huffington Post on that. It is dreadful. And it's not the way that society should be functioning. I think we need louder voices to call out these people.
What about, I mean, like Julius Malema yesterday was saying that some journalists are house niggers. This was his term for it. I mean, surely this is not healthy. Do you think he's in a corner and he's just retaliating? Or do you think maybe he's trying to provoke the media? What's going on there?
I don't know exactly what's going on, but it's also not new. It's not the first time that we've heard this. We've heard it for a long time from political parties, and that party in particular, the EFF in particular, when it started with ANN7. And SANEF fought that battle, actually. And I remember we went to the offices of EFF and we met with the leadership. We ended up agreeing to disagree because we were saying, you cannot threaten a reporter because they work for a certain organization. Mm. You simply cannot bar them from coming. We ended up, as I say, agreeing to disagree. We didn't find our way there. So it's not the first time.
I mean,
we saw Floyd Shivambu.
Floyd punched someone. And, you know, it's like Donald Trump kind of demonizing CNN. Mm. Obviously, the two are quite different, because the one was actual violence and a threat of violence. And with Trump, he's just trolling CNN into the ground. And it seems to be working, I'm sad to say.
And, you know, if you don't like it, just switch off. You've got options. You cannot listen. You cannot read it. You cannot watch it. Just switch off. But going out to intentionally attack and use Twitter as a weapon and to mobilize those mm-hmm. around you, I think that's unacceptable. I really do. These are people's careers and lives that are at stake here. To tell a senior editor in South Africa, I wish you had a bullet in your head.
Yeah.
I mean, it just doesn't get worse than that.
That's criminal.
It is criminal.
There needs to actually be, I reckon what we probably need is to have some kind of organization that has enough money to prosecute each of these, because those are real threats. I mean, in a court, they'll stand as real threats. Even if it comes from someone who's trying to be anonymous, that person must have to pay a fine.
Well, it's finding that person who's this anonymous soldier.
You track these IP addresses
behind this egg. Yeah.
You just need a bit of money and some time, and people can find them. But ultimately, once there's a price for, like, there's a price for a newsroom. If you report wrong on a story, or if you're a news editor, you put your name to something and it turns out to be fake, it's got a reputational cost. And it sometimes even has a financial cost for you. And there needs to be, for people who think that they're just having fun on social media, they need to realize that's the same as being in charge of your own newsroom. And if something goes wrong, you're going to have a cost attached to that.
It's not unique to South Africa. I was having a conversation with Maria Ressa. She's a very widely respected journalist from Rappler internationally. The threats that have come her way only because her reports against the current government are not always positive. She's been threatened with rape. She's been threatened with murder. I mean, to be threatened with rape as a female journalist, it certainly doesn't get worse than that.
Yep.
Well, how do you think media freedom's looking?
I think media freedom,
especially
outside,
in South Africa first and then
yes,
the world.
Outside of social media.
Yeah.
I think media freedom is looking okay. So we currently have a situation with President Cyril Ramaphosa where he's got the Protection of State Information Bill sitting on his desk. It's part of former President Zuma's legacy.
We
if
think
you
that
like.
Bill is nonsense.
We think that part of the bill is nonsense. Some part is okay, but we think that some parts of this bill are actually nonsense. We'd like it to be redrafted to remove those bits out. So we're waiting to see what happens there. But we've had all the right overtures from the president. We've had good conversations with him. He's very open to these discussions. And I'm very, very positive about that on a formal government level.
Okay.
I get worried when we break it down into the smaller parties, as we've seen, and these attacks on media and journalists and individuals within the media space,
mm-hmm.
and calls on audiences to block the Sunday Times was the last one I saw two Sundays ago,
then,
I think it was.
And then if you read all the people who were blocking the Sunday Times, none of them really
knew
why.
They were saying, why are we doing this?
Yeah.
Yes.
Nobody was really sure of why they were blocking the Sunday Times, but they were blocking it
so
anyway.
I think this mobilization of don't watch this and do that and block this and boycott
that.
Exactly.
Yeah, but maybe part of the problem is that we need to just not take these mobs online seriously. Like before we would have ignored them. Why are we paying attention to them now?
Unfollow.
Bunch of nobodies.
That's it. Unfollow. Yeah. Block if you need to.
I mute people.
Mute,
much
exactly.
Easier,
exactly.
I didn't even realize that. Half the time, I don't know there's a controversy going on because I've muted all the loud, irritating people who don't necessarily add value. It's a great way to go. But we've got to stop taking this seriously. I think a lot of newsrooms are partly to blame for giving too much power to social media trends and to start interpreting that is the news when actually it's just noise.
Gareth, I completely agree with you. I think far too much power has been put on Twitter in particular, and that's
and
not journalism.
Only four
reporting,
or 5 million people on Twitter in South Africa.
But
out
reporting
of a population
on what someone
of,
says on Twitter.
Yeah, it's not a story.
It's not always a story. Sometimes it is a story, but it's not always a story. And I think we're seeing a trend where it's becoming more and more, you know, so-and-so says that, and suddenly, oh, yeah, we don't have another lead. We don't have another angle. Let's go with that. You know what? Let's be a bit more discerning is what I would say.
Well, I mean, there's lots more we could talk about, but I know you've got a new career to go and start, and I'm very excited for you. And,
thank you.
And obviously, they're going to be sad to lose you at EWN, but you know what? Good for you that you've decided to make a move. It's a tough thing to do, and I think it's an exciting thing to do, and I wish you well.
Oh, thank you so much, and thank you for having me. I've loved being
here.
Sure,
it's always nice to talk.
It takes me back to our early morning days, Gareth. I've loved it.
That was some time ago.
No, you made me eat snake. Do you remember that?
What?
Hey.
Yeah. Radio Survivor, pickled snake, something like that.
Who won that? I think it was Isabel Jones.
Shame that she died a few years later.
She died after that. We killed her.
Oh,
killed
no.
Fair deal, Isabel Jones.
The old fair deal, Isabel Jones.
Oh, wow.
I think I might have put her in the grave with the eating of all kinds of animal parts and doing physical challenges. I mean, sure. She was already an old lady.
Shame on you.
The things we did. But we had fun. We had fun and it was wonderful.
All right.
Thanks,
well,
Gareth.
There we go. Katie Katapotis, everybody.
Thanks,
what
Gareth.
A busy morning.
This is CliffCentral.com.